Welcome to the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast, where we explore family offices, real estate, and the art of preserving legacies and wealth. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and I'm going to be utilizing my experience of investing on behalf of a number of prominent families and working directly for a number of prominent families on their real estate portfolio. I'm going to tap into my decades worth of experience in real estate investing and relationships with some of the most prominent family office leaders in the industry, academics from universities around the world, and industry experts and leaders in the real estate space. So whether you're a family member, family office executive, family office, or real estate enthusiast, the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast will empower you with knowledge and influential voices. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and this is the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast. In this episode of Family Office Real Estate Insights, we speak with David Turley, Kornheim Mortgage, on the current state of the debt marketplace. All right, so thank you for being on today's episode. Today's the Family Office Real Estate Insights, and we have David Turley with Kornheim Mortgage. And David, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, as I mentioned before, my partner speaks very, very highly of you. It always comes up. And we had a conversation yesterday that I think was very, very relevant to the market. But why don't you take just a second, tell a little bit about yourself, how long you have been in the business, and, you know, how you're in the market on a daily basis.
Yeah, sure thing. So, I've been with Kornheim Mortgage for 23 years. Kornheim started, we trace our roots back to 1897 when the family got into the real estate business. We got into the mortgage banking business in the 1960s, where we mostly represented insurance companies who were trying to make mostly commercial real estate debt investments all over the country. And they would hire kind of local experts. They would let them originate loans and service those loans. And so we were one of these local correspondents initially, but as the real estate business grew up and became more institutionalized and the number of capital options grew, we both grew kind of the breadth of kind of our capital expertise, you know, representing not just insurance companies, but really the whole world of kind of financing options for commercial real estate, and also kind of expanded nationally. So we finance, you know, a wide variety of different real estate types, you know, multifamily and office and retail and industrial, but also storage and hotels and medical office and some of these, you know, built to suit rentals and, you know, condo buildings and other things that have kind of become, you know, more emerging kind of asset classes in the last couple of decades. You know, we, as I mentioned, been with the firm 23 years. So my partner and I kind of run the business and have a couple of different teams that kind of work with us to kind of originate, you know, loans and service clients all over the country. We have, you know, transacted about $1.5 billion in loans over the last 18 months. Kind of across, again, asset classes and geographies. So we're in the market, you know, constantly with a wide variety of commercial real estate deals seeking capital, mostly debt.
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest thing, and I didn't realize this, that sticks out to me is you said 23 years. Is that right?
Right.
All right. So you've been through multiple cycles. You've been through the recession. You've been through COVID, right? Which is fantastic, because it's one of those things that, you know, a lot of people that got into real estate back in, you know, 2012, 2013, at least operators, especially multifamily, if you couldn't make money, then I don't think you had a pulse, basically, because everything's been going up. But what we've been seeing over the last, you know, 6 months or so, we've been seeing some changes, right? And you always get people that are talking about, oh, we're going to go into a recession and we're going to have issues. And so, you know, we have a lot of families, and we're here to provide them with, you know, information and updates of what's happening. So when we were going into the end of the year, we had all these interest rate hikes that were starting to happen, right? You know, we'd heard that a bunch of institutions on the equity side was trying to put together dry powder, et cetera. But what did you see between the end of last summer and the end of the year?
So the last, you know, I've been doing this 23 years, but the last, you know, year has been fairly unprecedented in my career with this just kind of rapid set of assumptions that everyone's kind of holding pretty closely, changing pretty dramatically. And so what we're in right now is not a typical recession, right? We had the unprecedented events of the pandemic, right? With a collapse in demand, this propping up of demand by a huge amount of government stimulus, which among other things led to enormous bank deposits because money was just being socked away in bank accounts, leading to this huge amount of capital that wanted to go deploy and invest. And so coming out of the, you know, really the depths of the pandemic, there was a huge amount of capital created and, you know, out buying assets. And so asset values soared. You saw the stock market, right, crash and then immediately like go through the roof. So the you know, that set of assumptions, like coming out of a severe, you know, dip, everyone flush with capital, you know, we hit, you know, the war, inflation spiking. And so the, you know, the uncertainties that created have to some extent moderated because, you know, the worst case scenarios that people were concerned about have just not materialized. And inflation does seem to be settling down some. Not quite to where the Fed wants it to be, but it seems to be settling down. We have not entered a recession. Jobs numbers came out today. They were off the charts good. So it seems that, you know, we might be able to avoid the, you know, the potential calamity of a real recession with really high rates at the same time. Mm-hmm. So all that to say that there's a lot of uncertainties that have been created, and it's very expensive to borrow short term right now, because short term rates have gotten really high. Short term rates are here and long term rates are lower, which is, you know, this kind of inverted yield curve, but it's very sharply inverted right now. So it makes, you know, frankly, more sense to buy, you know, for kind of longer term stable cash flow, given the cost of that debt, than it does to embark on kind of business plan financing and absorb, you know, short-term interest rates that can be as high as, you know, 10-11%.
Yeah, which is, you know, I was looking at a model that somebody was putting together the other day, and, you know, the interest rates could go up as much as 9%, right? However, in today's environment, you know, going into the beginning of the year, I think the general perception is that, okay, it's going to be extremely difficult to get loans, right? So if you want to go out and get loans, you're going to have a big problem. Is that actually what you've seen year to date for loans, or is there actually a readily available amount of lending that people can still get access to?
It's a great question. So let me take it in pieces. The multifamily space, you know, the government agencies, Fannie and Freddie, provide a ready supply of capital and kind of backstop that market. So they provide liquidity. There's not a lack of liquidity in the multifamily space, even on the bridge side, because you can always exit to the agencies. Mm-hmm. In the other asset classes, you don't have the government support. And so what we found last year, summer through the end of the year, really, was that the larger institutions and those relying upon Wall Street funding, you know, like securitizations of various sorts, including CLOs, which is short-term securitization, CMBS, which is longer-term securitizations, that market was in, you know, feeling a lot of headwinds. That market was, you know, in disarray. And so those lenders were pulling back significantly. The lenders that were lending were local regional banks, credit unions, kind of those that were fairly insulated from the larger capital markets dislocation. What we found recently is some of the, you know, some of the kind of bigger capital sources, institutional capital sources and securitized sources have seen a rebound recently as the cost of their funding has come down, as credit spreads on, you know, corporate bonds have come in because, again, these worst case, you know, scenarios are just not materializing for the economy. And they're becoming a more viable capital source. Their cost of funds is decreasing, while the banks, after getting flush with cash during the pandemic, are seeing a huge outflow of deposits. And some of them so dramatically that they are no longer lending at all because their existing book of loans is not getting refinanced, is not running off as they had expected because loans that are maturing are just not getting paid off. They're having to just extend. And this runoff of deposits means their core capital ratios have been compromised. They're kind of, you know, core capital deposits to loan, you know, asset ratio is out of whack. And so they're having to kind of pull back on lending. So there's been a shift from, you know, kind of local, you know, more regional lenders to kind of more national lenders over the past couple of months. To answer your question now more directly, there are plenty of sources for loans. You know, lenders are being more conservative in their underwriting because of, you know, general concerns about the economy and the question of where rates are going to be long term and what cap rates are. But there is still plenty of liquidity. Again, the balance of power has somewhat shifted from kind of banks to, you know, non-banks.
Got it. And what about, you know, one of the things with multifamily for me over the last couple years, it's really been hard for me to say, hey, let's really get into this because four caps, four and a half caps, right? And now you have the potential with a lot of these loans becoming negative leverage if they were interest only or if they were variable rates. So what do you see happening in that space? Are there people that you're seeing purchasing loans that are negative leverage on some of these multifamilies? And what is your thoughts about some of this distress that everybody keeps talking about that's, you know, should be happening in the multifamily space?
I mean, we're not seeing anybody purchase loans yet. We're just not seeing people, you know, banks kind of capitulate and start selling assets. It may be coming. You know, one of the ways to resolve an imbalance between kind of deposits and assets is to sell assets, right? As far as negative leverage, I mean, you buy with negative leverage, you know, really for two reasons. One, you think rates are going to come down and you're going to refinance later at a more attractive interest rate, or you expect rents to go up a lot. And either you're going to do a renovation and, you know, kind of pop rents, or, you know, you're in a location where rents are just going to keep escalating. As rent growth is slowing some around the country, and in some cases is negative, some of the, you know, hottest markets over the past couple of years, there's some people still making that bet, but I think a lot of folks are no longer willing to just kind of buy into perpetually low interest rates and tons of rental income growth. So the short answer is we're seeing kind of a standoff between buyers and sellers. You know, a lot of sellers are not forced to sell. They don't want to admit that their property has gone down in value. And a lot of buyers are just pointing to the math and saying, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You're going to have to, you know, change your cap rate assumptions. But for the time being, I mean, even, you know, we're not in the appraisal business, and I'm glad that we're not, but if we, it's a tough business to be in right now because you do the math and you say, well, the cap rate is X, but you look at the comps and the cap rate's a lot lower than X. And right. So what do you conclude? And it's tough.
So, you know, there's we're having a board meeting and one of our board members brought up, they were talking to somebody, I think it was in the banking industry. And I think that oversees the, you know, one of the decision makers over the bank regulations. And they thought that a lot of loans were going to be coming. There was going to be an issue because they weren't going to go back. The banks weren't going to go back, or the lenders, to what happened in COVID, where they said, look, we'll extend the loans. We'll try to work with you on this. And instead saying, you know what, we're not going to do that. We're either going to take it back or you got to figure out a solution for somebody to come in, buy at a discount. What's your feeling in regards to that? I know that some of the hotel loans have already started, you know, blown up a little bit going into the last year. In fact, in New York, there was some major hotels that were, you know, taken back and or purchased at an extreme discount. So what are your thoughts on, you know, the lenders and their attitude today compared to COVID?
Well, COVID was happening to everyone simultaneously. No one could control it or predict it. So there was a lot of sympathy for COVID situations among lenders, particularly local regional lenders. But as far as the banks, you know, the banks are going to do what, you know, either their stockholders require of them if they're a large institution or what the regulators require of them. And if the regulators are willing to kind of give them space to work things out with borrowers without having to kind of recognize, you know, higher reserves and all these loans that are no longer covering because they don't have enough cash flow because the, you know, they had to resize the interest rate, I think they could buy some time. Personally, we saw lenders kind of react quickly. Some lenders, very few lenders, react quickly in COVID and sell assets, sell loans. Like, oh, this is a bad loan, to get it off our books. And then lo and behold, a year and a half later, the loan was fine. If they had just hung on a little bit, they would have avoided, you know, a big write down. And so I think, you know, if interest rates do continue to come down, I don't think continue, if they come down, if the Fed stops increasing rates and starts bringing them back down again, you know, interest rates could come back down quickly. And I think they could bail out a lot of these situations that have maybe temporarily higher interest rates that you have to, you know, you're struggling to cover at. So yeah. I would expect that because the problem is so endemic, it's across the entire market. It's across all asset classes. Loans that are coming due now are resetting from, you know, 4% to 6.5 or 7 in some cases.
Yeah.
I think the regulators are going to give the banks some room. I don't think they're going to say, sure, just go take a massive haircut. Banks don't want to take assets back. They're not geared up to take assets back. What they really do is they really do is they sell the loans to a distressed asset investors. And when they do that, they're going to take some sort of loss.
Yep.
I don't personally see there being this, you know, forcing mechanism to just make banks clear out all these loans. And therefore, to your question about distress, I mean, there's so much capital out there still.
Yeah.
I just don't see some major distress wave. I think we're going to bounce along kind of like we have and largely avoid it.
Well, you know, you brought up the aspect of, you know, we're not in a recession, et cetera. I've been saying over the last 4 or 5 years and publicly about, you know, we're not going to see a recession on the real estate side till 27, 28. And so we've still got, you know, a number of years till we're there. And that's just based off of historical information of 250 years in the US, the UK, and Australia, and based upon what's happened historically. Now, COVID came in, and that was a white elephant. We never thought we were going to see that. But from the 23 years that you've been in the business, does this time in the market remind you of any other time historically?
No. With the exception, I should say, with one exception, that there's a ton of capital out there.
Yep.
And that has happened before, but just to compare this to like the great, you know, financial crisis, right? Yeah. That was a time when, you know, demand dipped and then came right back. And, you know, we there wasn't much of a recession, but there was a very large capital markets dislocation. There was no capital liquidity for years. It took a long time for lenders to kind of work through their issues and finally get back to the business of like lending money again. And so if you could find capital and you could find deals, you made a lot of money. But it was very hard to find capital, frankly, or deals. But this time around, business, you know, during the pandemic just crashed in some sectors, right? The hotel sector, in you know, a lot of retail leases, you know, office leases, people are not, you know, we're shut down, I'm not paying you. But then, you know, and even in the depths of that, there was so much capital created by the Fed that, yeah. You know, asset prices, in spite of kind of tough fundamentals, asset prices went soaring off. What's happening right now is this kind of unusual third place, right? Which is the fundamentals are generally very strong. Like, we're not in a recession. The economy has the lowest unemployment rate since 1969, as of this morning, right? Fundamentals are strong. There's plenty of capital out there. The question is, what should that capital yield? Mm-hmm. And short-term rates, you know, treasury rates are 4.5%. You can put your money in a treasury bond and get 4.5%. So, you know, why take equity risk for 6%, you know, yeah. or 5.5%? It, you know, you struggle to have that make sense. It's a question of what are the future cash flows worth, right? Not, you know, do I believe in the future cash flows will be there? Because most people do. And so that's where it's a math game, you know, like, and we're all kind of waiting. It seems, I say we, there's a lot of people out there waiting to see where things are going to settle out. What's the new norm?
And so from what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't really see any type of major distress coming out over the next 6-9 months?
I don't. I mean, unless I'm wrong about the forcing mechanism, unless the regulators do require banks to just recognize, you know, all these losses and just get rid of loans, which I still see happening. It's just too systemic. There's really not. And I guess the other caveat is, you know, the war and inflation. If there's some major, you know, negative surprise on either of those fronts, that could change everything. Yeah. But in general, there's, you know, things, you know, on the fundamental side are actually pretty strong. I mean, among other things.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because that's one of the things that, I've said, is that I've said that, you know, you have to still look at the fundamentals, right? Because, and is it a good opportunity? And you can make money in an up market, you can make money in a down market. But if you look at the fundamentals, does that still support what you're working on, right? Or the investment that you're going to be making, or the investment that you have. So for those thinking about waiting to deploy money to all this distress, what would you say to those people? And secondly, for those that have investments already in real estate, what would be your thoughts in regards to that?
Well, I'll answer the second question first. If you already have investments, you know, there's no reason to sell. I mean, you don't want to sell at what somebody's going to try to get you to buy, you know, get you to sell it right now. I think you wait. I think the future is very bright personally. As for, you know, if you're waiting to deploy capital, I would also say, you know, generally don't wait. Meaning, you know, once the clouds clear and the sun's back out, everybody is going to be sitting on capital is going to be like trying to make up for lost time. I don't think you should bet the farm right now, but I think it does still make sense to deploy capital in a measured, you know, kind of way during this time of turmoil. You know, to your point, you can make money in bad markets or good markets. We don't really know what this is yet, to be honest, right? I mean, we'll know more probably in retrospect, but I think there is a ton of capital that is going to kind of likely remove, you know, opportunities, you know, as soon as we're back to smooth sailing.
Got it. And one thing, you know, just a couple more questions here, but one thing that got up yesterday was we were talking about some of the multifamily lending. And I think we threw out the number of 8% or what's not. And you're like, no, you can actually get it much better than that, right? So right. there are lenders out there that are lending at reasonable rates. Is that what you've been seeing across the board?
Yeah, I mean, long-term rates, the 10-year treasury rate has fallen to the, you know, mid threes. Long-term rates are in the mid fives, you know, even low fives in some cases. So, you know, if you look at a long historical trend, that is, you know, it's a very good interest rate. This is not, you know, some kind of abnormally high interest rate. What is high, even abnormally high is short-term rates. But on the long-term rate side, you know, if you can borrow in the fives, you know, you're still, you know, again, from a historical perspective, that's a very attractive interest rate.
Right. Well, David, David Turley, Kronhauer Mortgage, thank you so much. We're going to lean on you again here in the future, because your experience is, you know, you being through multiple cycles is something that is extremely important, and how to deal with things. And of course, the relationships and everything else. And so thanks so much. I know that this has been a topic on a lot of people's mind about what's going on, right? And do we sit around? Are rates going to get out of control and go crazy, you know? And what about a recession and everything else? And you bring up a lot of good points. So just want to thank you for being on Family Office Real Estate Insights. Like I said, we'll be circling back and, you know, giving us your thoughts on the market, you know, as time goes on.
My pleasure. Good luck out there.